comes back and the first quail calls. Follow the drinking gourd. For the old man is waiting for to carry it a
longer recovery trip. I wasn't on last Sunday, as you all know, but because of that, I suppose I have 17 extra minutes today. But the great joy of it is you've got 17 extra minutes with my first guest, Jennifer Mlynarczyk. Is that good enough? Say it, Jennifer. Jessica, say it.
Jessica Mlynarczyk, yes.
It's a Croatian name. She is the author of Secret Chicago, A Guide to the Weird, Wonderful, and Obscure, and she will be on all the way until 9:40, so that should sell some books. You're originally from Ohio, yes?
Correct. I'm from Cleveland.
And you came here roughly 10 years ago?
Yeah, it'll be 10 years this year.
Why did you come here?
Well, it was...
Chicago's the greatest town in the world, and I wanted to see all the secrets it had.
It was the recession, and I lost my job, and I was always coming to Chicago. I had a lot of friends here visiting. And, you know, it's very similar to Cleveland. It's a bigger version.
Without a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Without a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But we've got similar terrible winters and sports woes. So I always felt comfortable coming here, and I just took the plunge.
Did you get a job here right away, or did you have to look for a job?
I had to look, yeah. I was, you know, walking some dogs and doing random things for a few months, but I eventually ended up somewhere.
And you wound up in a marketing job. That's
correct.
Basically your career.
Yes.
So how does this book come to be?
Well, when I moved here, I was just so excited to be in a new city.
And explore.
Explore and energized and curious about everything. And, for example, I would go jogging down Clark Street and see a building with an Egyptian facade.
Think, sure.
How did that get there?
Ruby storage. Yeah.
Ruby storage. But I didn't know what that was. I was new. So I started blogging on, I started a blog called Urban Explorer, just for myself, just to have fun researching these funny things.
Without some letters, it's urbnexplorer.com. You started that, why?
Just to have fun seeking out new places in a new city and explore the history behind them and kind of nerd out just for myself, really. I wasn't expecting any audience.
Don't you find in one of the things, the joys that I found in Secret Chicago, A Guide to the Weird, Wonderful, and Obscure, that there are a lot of people, even in this town, lifelong Chicagoans, who might indeed jog down Clark Street and might indeed see these kind of Egyptian motif on the outside of a building and just not pay any attention to it. That has always flabbergasted me about you weren't like that in Cleveland. What is it that spurred your curiosity? Because a lot of people don't express their curiosity.
You know, I think it was growing up, my family went on road trips all over Ohio and the Midwest. And, you know, they weren't extravagant vacations, but we would go to, like, Indian burial mounds and weird little museums all over the place. So I guess
Did they have an interest in history, or what did your parents do?
They don't have a background.
Yeah, sure.
Formally.
Sure.
But they've always been very interested in history. So,
yeah. And yeah. So they fostered that in you and your brothers and sisters.
Yeah. So when I had the chance to check out all of these places in a new city and see it with fresh eyes, I think that's what it takes sometimes, is that outside perspective to really raise
notion.
The question of what is this and why
so
is it here?
You start this blog, Urban Explorer, urbnexplorer.com. And what did you find in doing that? That people were, would you post little things like, hey, I saw this Egyptian motif on the outside of a building?
I did, and I was surprised when anybody told me that they read it and flattered. It was kind of like people would say, oh, you go out and you do all these things, and my message was, well, anyone
can do that.
Yeah, it's all this stuff is accessible to anyone. And then I started writing for other publications around town. I wrote for Chicagoist for many years before.
Oh, I love Chicagoist.
That was killed.
Yeah. What did you write for Chicagoist?
For Chicagoist, I did a lot of music and
reviews,
kind of culture things. Yeah. Yes.
With the notion of you're working in marketing, you're working for a big firm in marketing, or you don't have to say exactly where you work, but what were you doing in the marketing field?
Oh, sure. I work for DMC, which is an engineering consulting firm, and they specialize in a lot of industrial automation and controls. So I'm their marketing manager, and they were pretty small when I joined, although they've been around since 96, but they've had a lot of growth in the last few years and have opened offices.
But you seem to have had certainly an interest in, but maybe even an aspiration to right beyond the confines of the engineering firm.
Yes. I've learned a lot and done a lot of technical writing there, but outside of work is when I would follow all of these threads.
So when people would write into your blog, Urban Explorer, without the, it's urbnexplorer.com, what were you posting on there?
I mean, I would just look up, you know, cool old bookstores or architecture, different street festivals in the city, you know, just getting out and about to different neighborhoods.
Well, now, were you single then? You now have this nice guy who's a your fiance who's an engineer, so I'm assuming you
yes.
might have met him
different
at,
firm.
At work. Oh, a different firm. Yes. Really, really. Romeo and Juliet. Did you, obviously, you connected through the blog with a lot of Chicagoans.
I did. It was a good platform for that. And also just going to these different events and these places around town. And I was single and I was doing it alone most of the time. He was doing similar thing in Washington, D.C. where he was. So now we've got some company.
Were you ever, let me ask you about the nature of this town. And this book does take you, ladies and gentlemen, all over the town. Were you at any point as a single woman in this place fearful?
Yes. You know, getting out and about by myself, there are certainly places that you've got your guard up all the time, but more than others.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I was young and, you know, invincible, and I just wanted to see
it. Young and naive, and I'll go anywhere.
Exactly.
I'll do anything.
Yes.
When did you start to fall in love? I mean, obviously, you had some affection for Chicago mm-hmm. before you came out here and before mm-hmm. you started writing about it. But were there any specific things that started to really foster your love? And if I mean, it's hard mm-hmm. not to. I know Cleveland's got a lake, but this is a much different kind of lake scene here. That would do it for some people. The river does it for some mm-hmm. people. The architecture does it for some people.
I'd say maybe it's the architecture. I just looking at some of these old buildings. Sometimes I just try to imagine what did that street look like during the 30s? What did it look like in the 1890s? And there's this sense that there are so many layers to Chicago's story, and some of them are right below the surface, and they're accessible, and not that hard to peel back if you look.
Did you start doing some of the, or writing some of the foundation, obviously, for your fine book, Secret Chicago Guide to the Weird, Wonderful, and Obscure, is the result, the foundation obviously comes from Urban Explorer. You must have started doing that and indeed becoming a kind of urban explorer of the Chicago scene, yeah?
It did, yes. So I would say there are places in this book from throughout my Chicago journey. Many of them, of course, I learned while I was researching this book.
Sure.
But some of them are from my earlier years of exploring. So things like Reby Storage, which probably a lot of Chicagoans know.
No, you're wrong. I mean, I write about some of this stuff all the time. And the one thing that does amaze me is that it does sometimes take the outside eyes to realize, wow, what is it? Or to even, it's one thing to see it. But it's another interesting thing that takes a little, not intellectual energy, but a little energy of some sort to say, I wonder what that is. It is obviously 1,000 times easier in this internet age to do that, but I think you still have to do it.
Even a place like the Green Mill, which is so iconic in Chicago, I asked a lot of people before I put that in. I thought, you know, is this going to be, I'm trying to feature places that are a little less known, and
which you have many, and that's one of the things I'm going to ask you. We have so much time today on the show. Is why include? Yeah, that's a great. I'm glad you brought that up because I say to myself, if someone is thumbing through the index, which lists something not in the neighborhood of, but exactly, 198 places. Why the Green Mill? Because people would say, the Green Mill. I know. Mm-hmm. What the Green Mill is. Why the Green Mill, then?
I asked a lot of people before I included it, and they did not No, about the Green Mill.
They just thought it was a nightclub.
Right. And so there are some places in here, you know, lifelong Chicagoans are going to recognize.
Of course.
My hope is there are others that will surprise them. But even if you know about jazz or live music at the Green Mill, you might not know about the Uptown Poetry Slam that was generated there.
Mark Smith.
Still continues.
Mark Smith,
correct.
Mark
yeah.
Smith. Going on as we speak. Going on as
Sunday night.
Or coming to the end as we speak. So that must have been, you know, you've got the Gold Pyramid House. One I really adore is number 80, The Last Pioneer, because Cap Streeter was indeed one of the strangest human beings. You can look at all the aldermen we have and all the mayoral candidates and say, Jesus Christ, these are some strange, strange people. Cap Streeter is arguably the strangest person in the history of Chicago.
He's my favorite Chicagoan. I'm
is
glad
that
you
right?
brought that.
Is
yes.
that right? he's a character. Talk a little about Cap and his wonderful, beautiful, lovely battle axe of a wife named Ma Streeter.
Well, he was out on the lake one day and his ship washed ashore, present day Streeterville, on a sandbar, and he just invited some people to start dumping trash there.
And also to party and drink there,
yes.
too. And to, hey, here's a gun, the police are coming, and fight off the police.
Yeah. Yes, he claimed that the district of Lake Michigan, as he called it, was not subject to Illinois or U.S. law because it was east of, you know, the
Chicago,
the land
yeah.
line. And this went on for 30 years. Of course, the lakefront neighbors, including people like Potter Palmer, all the elites, were not so happy about this rowdy bunch drinking nearby and, you know, squatting on the land. But reading the old press clippings about the shenanigans that he got into, it's like slapstick. It's so funny. I mean, his wife threw boiling water out the window on some cops.
Yeah.
They were shooting the cops in the behind with pellets.
Yes, you could say that the Streeters were sort of adversarial in their relationship
yes.
with the city fathers. But again, that's a great example, and I'm so glad he's in the book, or it's in the book, in that people, well, okay, there's Streeterville, and no one ever, no one has even asked me, like, what is Streeterville?
And so the thing in the book is a statue of him.
Yeah.
Which I think is in front of a diner.
It's not far from right. It's not far from here. It's at Grand and, I'm going to get it for you, corner of McClurg and Grand, a couple blocks from this very studio.
And it's a, you know, a statue of an old man, top hat, and he's holding a little dog. He looks totally innocent.
He does.
But if you didn't know who he was and what he did, you would just think he's an innocent old man.
You know, I also, one of the things is, I like the sculpture, too.
I mean,
it's not a bad piece of art. There are some bad pieces of art in this town. One of the other things in this town that you certainly discovered, which you could not, would people have written many books about it, are the outdoor sculptures in Chicago form what I think is one of the great outdoor galleries in this country. It's an astonishing way to sort of see and explore the city. Where did you live when you first came to Chicago? What neighborhood?
When I first moved here, I was in Lincoln Park by DePaul, and I've been in Wicker Park for 7 years now.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You have explored the entire city. What other neighborhoods really intrigue you before we get down to these specifics?
Oh, gosh, it's such a hard question.
Well, I mean, Pilsen. I always find Rogers Park interesting, Hyde Park, Bronzeville's kind of interesting, if a bit downtrodden.
I was really intrigued by the southeast side, actually, when I was writing the book.
Oh, wow, good for you.
Because
nobody goes there.
Yeah, it's just...
Like Hegwisch and
exactly.
South Chicago.
And maybe it's the Cleveland in me, it feels a little like home, but...
well, it's undeniably gritty, but it's also historically significant, and it's... you're right, that's a fascinating... How would you get to these places? Would you drive, or would you take public transportation, or would you run?
I do have a car, same one I've had since
high school. Wow.
Yes.
The one you drove to Chicago?
It is, and public transportation, of course, yes. So... but yeah, the southeast side really intrigued me because I hadn't spent a lot of time down there, and just digging up some gems and learning about that area was really fascinating to me.
Well, it is a fascinating book, which we're going to explore at some length in the next half hour. Jessica Millenaric. That close?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Millenaric is here with her. Where's your fiance? Is he over there?
He's
probably getting a drink somewhere. when are you getting married?
We're getting married this June at Garfield Park Conservatory.
That's a nice that's
park district.
That's also a beautiful, beautiful place. You dedicate this book to Joe, Chris, Christina, and Steve Millenaric, who taught me that every place holds adventure worth exploring, that must be your parents and brother and sister.
That is, yes.
And then you do have quotes. I don't remember how I got in here, but you have two quotes in the beginning of the book. One from me, which is true, actually. I did say this. There's not a day that passes that I do not find my head filled with images from Chicago's history. And then, I've never been on an inside or outside book jacket along with Sun Ra, who said, and then when I went to Chicago, that's when I had these outer space experiences and went to the other planets. It's good that you didn't reverse those quotes.
You're in good company.
Though I probably have said something very much like that. Please stay tuned. You have just listened to a bit of the extended Rick Kogan After Hours show. Jessica will be here for the next 40 minutes to get into real specifics of the book, of which there are very, 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 very many, like Chicago's smallest cemetery. And believe me, I have covered this town my entire life, and there are things in here that I didn't know, which is a really good endorsement for this book, because I, you know, this is what I've spent my life writing about this stuff. Jessica, so stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We'll also have on today storyteller Nestor Gomez and Daryl Nitz talking about a special concert for Martin Luther King. Ben Anderson's producing. My new buddy Ernie Skatton is engineering, and we're ready to go.
And rejoice. The great day is here. We're fighting for freedom and victory is near.
Welcome hallelujah. Back. You all last Sunday, the show was preempted by God knows what. The music you're hearing is from a fantastic CD called Oh Freedom, Songs of the Civil Rights Movement by Chris Vellillo. It is not only a CD, it is a DVD, it is a sort of burgeoning stage play that Chris wants to do. And it's really a remarkable piece of work. I'm having in later in the show Daryl Nitz and Takora Rogers, who are going to talk about Let Freedom Ring Chicago, a musical celebration of Dr. Martin Luther King. His birthday, for those of you who don't know or may have forgotten, is Monday the 21st. Jennifer Millenaric, Jessica, why do I keep calling you Jennifer? That's so bizarre. Jessica's a nicer name. Millenaric is in the studio. We've been talking about her book, Secret Chicago, A Guide to the Weird, Wonderful, and Obscure, about her fiancé, engineer, and about Cap Streeter, her favorite all-time Chicagoan. The book contains something in the neighborhood of, I think I discounted them, something like 198.
90.
Only 190. There were 190 in the
just
next
90.
Book. 90, okay. Just 90.
What is maybe next this? Book.
Oh, I see. I'm looking at page numbers. Creative Convenience.
Yes.
That's one that caught me a little off guard. It's at, I know where 1371 West Estes is. What is what is this place, Jessica?
It's a convenience store in Rogers Park. And, you know, it's just a corner store. You walk in. And it's called Kim's Corner Foods. You walk in and the owner, Thomas Kong, is just sitting at the counter like one does at a convenience store.
Right.
But when he's not tending to customers, he is sitting up there cutting out collages and making art. And he's using the leftover packaging materials from things that came into the store. So
that is a fascinating find. How did you find it, Jessica?
I think that I found that one from a neighborhood blogger, I believe, told me. And she hadn't been there, but she'd heard about it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Because he hangs up his art all over the store. So it's on the walls, of course. It's on the coolers. It's on the shelves. It's on some of the merchandise. So it's this very whimsical and unexpected thing where you're like, can I buy this? Is this art?
Sure.
What's going on in here? And some local artists, he caught their eye. And there's a mural project up in Rogers Park on the CTA overpasses, and they created a mural inspired by his collages. So it's right in front of his store.
That's really a fascinating, fascinating find. How did this, we were talking a little about it when I was taking it up in the elevator, how did this book come to be?
Yes, well,
you had your blog.
I had my blog. I was, writing for other publications around town. And
but
I can,
mostly doing music, Chicago was you were doing music,
music, arts,
and,
culture kind of stuff, and always just getting around town and, whatever.
Did you aspire at any point? Did you ever think to yourself, gee, I'd like to write a book?
I think I've always wanted to, but the opportunity came to me sooner than I would have thought. And it was through another writer. Referred me to this publisher because she knew they were doing this project in other cities, and she knew about the writing I did, and connected me with them, and it was a great fit.
Did you have to give them a proposal, or did they just take look at samples of your own work and judge your ability from that?
I did some samples of a few of the places in the book.
Was it daunting for you, or did you jump at this? I mean, on some level. Never having written a book, and okay, you're doing a blog, and you're doing some writing about things which you really like. Mm-hmm. Did you all of a sudden say, oh my God, I've got to really do this?
Yes.
I've got to come up with almost 100 places that are secret by what would have to be your particular definition of the word secret.
I did have to work out my definition, and I decided on places that are either hidden or somewhere that you might know about, or you might walk past it or see it, but you don't know the story behind it. So, you like public art, as you mentioned.
Let's take a look at, talking about Southside, this place, the Soldier's Grave.
Oh, that might be my favorite in the whole book.
What is it?
So, this is the grave of Andreas von Zerngibel, and it is a grave located in a scrapyard.
Yeah.
And it is actually Chicago's smallest cemetery as well.
How did it come to be?
Andreas lived in Germany, and he was a soldier. He actually fought against Napoleon in the Battle of Waterloo, where he lost an arm. And he was also a fisherman. He came here many years later in the 1850s and started fishing along the Calumet River and settled down right there.
But you would think, and I know you have, that what a journey that is. What would compel you to say, to be in Germany with a number of children, too, and say, hey, I think I'm going to go to Chicago and fish the Calumet River? That's an astonishing story on the face of it.
It isn't. Chicago was much smaller at the time, and then, down by present day 93rd and Ewing, it's pretty far removed from
anything. Oh, sure. The farm life is nothing. Wilderness. Mm-hmm. I mean, almost wilderness. This is a guy who I had never heard of before, which is a good and rare thing. What did you think? You must have been, in many ways, Jessica, really moved when you went down there and discovered it. How did you come to this place?
I was. So he died about a year after he moved to Chicago, unfortunately, and his family moved to the north side. And years later, the land became industrialized, and they then fought over the rights to his grave because he was buried where he lived. And the court, I think it was like all the way up to the Illinois Supreme Court, ruled that the company owned the land, but that the family had rights to visit to access the grave, and the grave always had to remain there. So time goes by, and a scrapyard is there. And his tombstone got knocked down a couple times. They put up concrete barriers around it. But now the company that owns it closed that location. So I took all the photographs in the book. So I visited every place, and I was worried that I wouldn't be able to get in because it's now closed.
Yeah, sure.
And this company has locations all over the world. So I thought, I'll leave a voicemail and see what happens. And they called me back, and I set up an appointment, and I got to go. And the interesting thing is there are, you know, old metal compactors and things and signs of industry. But the land is starting to look maybe more like when Andreas lived there.
Yeah, it's returning to nature.
It's very quiet, and I don't know. It's every time I go over the Skyway, I can't help but think about him down there, because he's the only one.
Yeah, that is, I mean, nothing else. And I mean, that is one of the great and highlights of Jessica's Secret Chicago, A Guide to the Weird, Wonderful, and Obscure. We got to take a little commercial break, and then we will come back and be staying all the way till after 9:30. Waiting for Christopher Little to sing. That is from his CD. All the music you're hearing tonight is from O Freedom, Songs of the Civil Rights Movement, played in honor of Martin Luther King, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s day, a week from Monday. Before we get back to my buddy Jessica and her book, Secret Chicago, Guide to the Weird, Wonderful, and Obscure, and we're going to talk about Bughouse Square, which is a very, the Bughouse Square debates, because I want to tell you about next weekend is a reading marathon of that Herman Melville masterpiece, Moby Dick. There are dozens, I can't do it, but there are dozens of people who are going to read all weekend long that amazing, amazing book. Such people as Paul DeRica, Sarah Paretsky is going to be reading, Blair Thomas, a number of people, actors from the Shakespeare Project of Chicago, my colleague Mary Wisniewski. It's all day. Just go to newberry.org and you'll find Moby Dick Readathon. I wish I could be there. I was going to be, but then I can't be. You have in here, Jessica, in your book, Secret Chicago, A Guide to the Weird, Wonderful, and Obscure, you do have the Bughouse Square debates, don't you?
I do, and I only attended for the first time a couple of years ago, although I had been going to the book fair. And
the book fair is amazing.
It's you got to mark your calendar now.
Yeah, usually in June, roughly June, around
July,
June,
yeah.
Around June or July.
And I have been to the book fair. I've walked through the park and probably seen people gather there, but I don't think I knew what was actually going on that day.
Yeah.
And
it looks bizarre.
It.
I mean, it does look. I've hosted it for about the last, I don't know, since Studs Terkel died 10 years ago. Hosted it, and I guess to the passerby, it would look bizarre. It would look like some strange protest or something.
And there are people in
costume.
Old-timey costumes.
Yes,
and all kinds of costumes.
Yeah, it looks like some Halloween party in the middle of
it
the summer.
It does.
But it is a great event, and that, too, is included in your book. You also have another place that that is a place of my childhood, the Couch Mausoleum, which sits in a very prominent spot between North Avenue and LaSalle Drive on Clark Street, sort of in front of what's called the Chicago History Museum, which I will always call the Chicago Historical Society. I will tell you that as a child coming over from Old Town, where I grew up, from the time we were about, I don't know, 8 until we were about 15, a bunch of us would go over there with hammers and chisels and anything, because we thought it was, there was treasure in there. We thought it was like King Tut's tomb. And I don't know if they fixed the outside of it, but there are dents, there are marks of our hammers and screwdrivers.
Goodness.
What is that thing? I mean, I know, but tell the listeners what that is.
Well, if anyone doesn't know,
because that's a good example. Sorry to interrupt you, Jessica, mm-hmm. but that's a good example of something that people would run by.
Yeah,
and people, millions of people, I would hazard to say, have seen it,
mm-hmm.
and a very small percentage of those have ever had the curiosity that you innately have to say, "What the hell is that, and why the hell is it here?" you answer those questions.
Well, for anyone who doesn't know, there are bodies in Lincoln Park.
Yes.
Still.
A lot of people don't know that.
It was formerly a cemetery, and they decided to move a lot of the bodies. They didn't get them all, so there's still several who are there. This was one grave that is visible, the only one that's visible that was not moved, and a hotel magnate named Ira Couch is buried there. But nobody knows who else.
Exactly. Whether any relatives.
It's a mausoleum.
It is a mausoleum.
Above ground, you can see it. It says Couch on it. But by the time his brother passed away, nobody knew who was in there. And some of the relatives are buried. I think is it Rose Hill Cemetery?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. And the cemetery records don't line up. And none of the family members know exactly who. There's a debate over how many people. It's like from 1 to 11 people could be in there. And the thing is rusted shut. So as you experienced, it's just a mystery.
Oh, yeah. And now it has a little nice little decorative fence around it. When I was a kid, it was overgrown with, you know, bushes and trees, so we could easily sneak in and try to break down. What we needed then was a genius engineer who might have explained to us how to actually get in the place. You also have, you go a little, not far afield, but you get into the Niles and do the Leaning Tower is a sort of notable, people know of the Leaning Tower, but for those of you out there who don't, what is it, Jessica?
Well, yes, there are 90 places in the book. 8 of them are in the suburbs surrounding Chicago, and the rest are in the city proper. So there's a Leaning Tower of Pisa in Niles.
What is it doing there?
It is disguising a water tower. So the gentleman who put it up, he needed a water tower for the pools for the nearby YMCA, and he decided to make it pretty.
Well, you take good pictures in here, too.
Thank you.
These color pictures are very nice. There's a section of color pictures in the middle of it. The rest is in black and white. Were there any... You must have had to, at some point, cull this list down from, you know, the 100 or something.
Yes.
What were the ones that were really... Were there a couple that were very, very difficult to wind up on the cutting room floor?
There were, and my hope is that I can keep covering all of these that didn't make it into the book that maybe there wasn't enough to say, and put them on my blog. So to keep the story going,
sure,
and I've got
a
little newsletter. So, I mean, like Calumet Fisheries is one that I love, but it gets a lot of press on like the Travel Channel and stuff.
No, that's true. So one of the things you're up against in any, do we break at 27 or go all the way to the half hour? We're breaking now because my great, great new producer, Ernie Skatton, is telling me to do so. We're going to break for commercials, but I'm going to keep Jessica after the news and talk a little bit more about her book. They're saying really interesting to do a book like this in the internet age where everybody is bowled over with information. Mm-hmm. That's let's talk about that after the news. Here, ladies and gentlemen, are some commercials. Civil Rights Movement, which is a CD, it's a live show, and it is one day to be a musical play. It's sort of in honor of Martin Luther King Day, which is 21st. I got about 5 minutes left with Jessica Milinarek and her lovely fiance here. They're getting married. They're going to get married at the Garfield Park Conservatory. They're going to honeymoon in Croatia. Maybe. That's not for sure yet.
Hoping.
And they'll do so on the royalties that are deserved. Nobody makes money in publishing anymore except Stephen King and Michelle Obama. But royalties are deserved for the book Secret Chicago,
Thank
A Guide
you.
To the Weird, Wonderful, and Obscure. It is Jessica's gathering of 40-some, I don't remember how many, Jessica?
90.
90-some, I'm so bad at math, 90-some secret places, some of which were secret even to me. And she, it's a marvelous way to sort of explore Chicago in the comfort of your own home, but I have the feeling it will compel people to get out of the comfort of their own home and go see some of these places. This is a difficult kind of book to do, Jessica, in the internet age where everything seems to be accessible, isn't it?
Yes, I would say I got most of my ideas through the old-fashioned way, through books.
Yeah.
And a lot of reading, and then just asking people, just
yeah.
anyone that I met, anywhere that I was, I would ask.
You find, being from Cleveland, you must have found that Chicagoans have a deep, deep abiding affection for, they're very chauvinistic about the place they live, and they are more than willing to share what they think are secrets. But it's all the whole definition of secret is so different than it was before Google. You know what I mean? I think you've done a remarkable job of finding things that are kind of secret.
Thank you. And I'm glad to hear that there are some surprises even for you. That
totally.
Means I've done my
Absolutely.
Job. Well, it's interesting, though. I was surprised in the process to encounter people. For example, I remember sitting at a bar in Bridgeport because we know that bartenders are the secret keepers of the neighborhood. So I talked
some.
To a lot
if
of
not
them.
If they call themselves mixologists, then walk out. But yeah, bartenders still have that.
But I was asking, you know, what are some interesting places in the
Good
neighborhood? And he said, oh, I'm just in my bubble here. There's nothing going on. There's nothing interesting. And it's funny because I know so many people who've never even made it down to Bridgeport, believe
yeah,
it or
I know.
Not. So
I know.
People were really excited to tell me about some places, but then also would get kind of jaded about their own area.
Sure.
And
sure. Well, some people want to be really protective now of their own areas,
That's true.
Too.
That's
There's
true.
No question about it. You have, again, I'm going to tell you, the title of the book is Secret Chicago, A Guide to the Weird, Wonderful, and Obscure. The author is Jessica Milinarik, Milinarik. You're having a trivia contest.
I am. It is going to be on Thursday, February 7th from 6 to 8 p.m. And it's at Fieldhouse Jones, which is on Chestnut around Orleans, so kind of River North area.
What is that place? I mean, I know that area pretty well.
Yeah.
What is Fieldhouse Jones?
It's very cool. It's a boutique hotel / hostel. There's a bar and a coffee shop there. So we're going to do Secret Chicago trivia. It's going to be a lot of fun. There'll be some food and drink specials. There'll be prizes.
It's and people can find that, I'm assuming, on your website, Urban Explorer.
Yes.
URBNExplorer.com. You think you have another book in you? You think there's another edition of this book?
I sure hope so. I've got so many more places that I didn't get to share, as I mentioned. And also when I'm travel now, that's like all I'm looking for in other cities are secrets that, everywhere. So that,
well, the other thing is that's a great way to travel, though.
It is.
It really is. You know, because you know full well that so many people go to so many places and stay in the resort because it has five different restaurants
right.
that ooh will give you the flavor of Mexico. Nonsense. Nonsense. You're a girl after my own heart. Congratulations
you,
on the upcoming nuptials. Your future husband seems like a good, decent guy. And I've said, as we said, if he lived with you while you wrote the book, you're never going to have
it's
any
so
problems.
True.
Writers are the most difficult people in the world. Jessica, it's a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you for having me, Rick.
Oh, my pleasure. It's a fun, fun, fun book. We're going to take a break now, and then make sure Nestor Gomez is here, because I can't wait to talk to him about the art of storytelling.
If you miss me at the back of the bus, you can't find me nowhere. Whoa, come on up to the front of the bus. I'll be riding up there. I'll be riding up there. I'll be riding up there. Whoa, come on up to the front of the bus. I'll be riding up there.
That's Christopher Little, the CD O Freedom, Songs of the Civil Rights Movement. One Day to Be a Stage Musical. I am sitting here with a guy I've known for some years, but not well. Nestor Gomez and I had a conversation some years ago at some event, didn't we? And Nestor has gone on to become one of Chicago's leading storytellers. You just got off a 80 Minutes Around the World immigration, a kind of a Steppenwolf show. What was that? Nestor, it's great to see you. He brought
me
these beautiful, beautiful dolls that his family makes in his native Guatemala. They're so beautiful. I'm going to put them on my, I don't know how to do this, but I'm going to have someone help me put them on my Facebook page. Tell me about the show that was at Steppenwolf.
The show 80 Minutes Around the World is a show where we bring storytellers that are either immigrants, descendants of immigrants, or allies. So we could hear the experience, the immigration experiences, because right now at this point we need to be building bridges instead of building walls.
Well, you need, I know what this country needs is a greater understanding of what an immigrant is and what it means. My grandparents were immigrants. Many people's grandparents were immigrants. Are you an immigrant?
Of course I'm an immigrant. I came to this country undocumented in the mid-1980s.
Why?
Because my family used to make those worry dolls that we sold at the airport, and then the civil war exploded in Guatemala. It was getting really bad, and tourists were not coming to the country, so we couldn't sell anything. So we had to.
So your entire family came.
So my mother and my parents came first. They came first. The plan was to make some money to then go back to Guatemala and then buy a house, but the civil war kept getting worse. So they decided it was better to bring us to the United States. So after a couple of years, they brought us to the United States.
What year was this?
There was the year was 1985 when me and my siblings came to the United States.
And did you come directly to Chicago?
We crossed the border undocumented from Guatemala to Mexico. And then we crossed the border through Mexico and the USA. I stayed in a safe house for a couple of weeks until my mother could put some more money together. And then they brought us from LA to Chicago.
Why Chicago?
Because my grandmother used to work here for a long time.
Yeah.
My grandmother had been working here in the United States. She was one of those persons that she was born here as a cleaning lady, basically.
Yeah.
And the first time that she came over, the people that brought her just like hid her documents and basically were had her like a slave for like
a
2 years. And she was able to escape and go back to Guatemala. And then she had another opportunity to come, and she almost didn't come because she's like, why am I going to be there as a slave? But it was a better family that treated her better, and she was sending money to Guatemala, and we were able to actually build a house in Guatemala. But after many years, she decided, well, she was getting old, and she decided it was time for her to retire. So she went back to Chicago, and my mother thought this is the opportunity.
Did she have friends in a community at least here?
She had
worked as kind of a slave. It seems that she would not have a support system here,
No, she didn't have
But she was familiar with the environment.
My grandmother, yes. My grandmother was familiar. And then she went back to Guatemala. And when she went back to Guatemala, my mother was like, this is my time to go and try to make a living. So my grandmother stayed with us, and then my parents came here.
Wow, and then they brought you there.
And then a couple of years later,
how old were you?
I was 15 years old.
How did you find it? It is, the proverbial foreign country.
Did
you speak English?
I didn't speak anything because I used to stutter when I was a kid. So I used to stutter back in Guatemala, and I was just getting over my stuttering just by talking to people, because we were too poor to, be sent to,
You're not going to a doctor or a speech therapist.
Exactly. It's like either go to the doctor or put food on the table. So we put food on the table. So my father used to send me to the corner store and be like, this is what you need to get. And at the corner store, you had to talk to the person, like, give me a pound of sugar, give me coffee. So he forced me to talk. So I'll be forced to talk to people. And I was getting over my stuttering when I came to the United States. But then, because I had to learn a new language, it was a new country.
Well,
I started
going to school, right?
Yeah, I started to stutter again. And basically, I was like a bilingual stutterer.
Well, where do you live in Chicago?
We live in Chicago. We live in. We first came to Uptown Chicago.
Yeah.
Then we moved to the Ukrainian Village, then to Humboldt Park. Right now, I live on Edgewater.
What did your father do here?
My father, he used to work as painting cars. My father died a long time ago. He died 20-something years ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he died basically the week after my son was born.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
And where'd you go to high school?
I went to Clemente High School.
And how'd that work out for you?
That was great. Clemente High School was very segregated, like Chicago is segregated. They have a floor that was all Latinos, and another floor where it was mostly African American, and then they segregated people by floor for some reason.
I know occasionally in the Latino community there is some, if not racism among Latinos, at least some tension between Puerto Ricans and Mexicans, for instance. How does a Guatemalan fit into that whole Latino thing?
I have always been so kind of like in the middle because of what you say, because the Mexican community is so dominant and also the Puerto Rican community is so dominant. So when you have like somebody from Guatemala, somebody from El Salvador, from Colombia, which are like little, like smaller numbers, we tend to get drawn to one community more than the other.
Okay.
Like, for example, when I speak Spanish, I went to Guatemala for the first time this past December, for the first time after 35 years.
Oh, my God.
Because I didn't have papers. I didn't have any immigration paper the first 15 years, and then I didn't have any any papers, meaning I didn't have any money.
Yeah, money.
So I was broke for the next 15 years. So I didn't have papers, so I went for the first time, and I was talking to people like I'm from Guatemala, and people kept looking at me like, where are you from? I'm like, I'm from here. They're like, why do you sound like Mexican?
What's wrong with your accent?
Yeah, and they're like, why do you sound like Mexican?
What's wrong with your accent? So you graduated from Clemente.
I graduated from Clemente, and I got married really quick. Right after Clemente, I got married. So I did not go to college, not only because I was undocumented, but because I got married and I had a family.
You have to make money. Unless you're going to teach at college. You can't make money in college. So you started having kids right away, too?
Yeah, so started
How many
having
kids
right?
do you have?
Two kids.
Still married to that same wonderful woman, or no?
No, I've been married.
That happens.
I've been married three times.
Okay, well, you're a storyteller, man. That stuff happens. You're an artist.
That's why I have so many stories, because I have made a lot of mistakes and a lot of crazy things.
It's not always a mistake. People change. People change. Yeah. How did you make a living?
I made a living working at, I worked at a fast food restaurant for like the first 5 years, and I was working my way up to management, and then they find out that I didn't have documents, and they fired me. And I remember the next week I went to work at another fast food restaurant. I was working at a Taco Bell, and then when they fired me, I went to work at Burger King, and I was like the guy that cleaned the garbage, the guy that I went from management to cleaning the garbage, but because I had a family, I couldn't be like, well, I'm a manager.
Yeah, right,
you
know?
So
right.
So you
right,
have to
right.
do what you have to do. And then I started working on restaurants, like fine dining restaurants, as a busboy, as a food runner.
Well, you couldn't have, for all those years, been at all aware of any kind of arts, writing, storytelling community in Chicago. It would have been the most foreign thing in the world to you, right?
Yeah, because I was like, you just worry about putting food on the table, about bringing the check so you could pay for the rent, so you could pay for everything that you need to pay. I did do a lot of writing because I always wrote poetry because of my storytelling years. I couldn't
express
myself.
You wrote poetry
myself.
Since you were a little boy?
Yeah, so I wrote poetry just for myself. I just kept hiding it for me, and I kept all these books of poems on a drawer in my dresser.
Wow.
And then,
what did it do for you? What did poetry do for you? I mean, it is a wonderful way to, I have found, especially for kids in neighborhoods like Englewood or Lawndale, when they write poetry, a lot of Louder Than a Bomb stuff too, that it is the only way they have to express themselves, because your coworkers are not going to sit there and they don't want to listen to you talk about how you feel about the moon or how you feel about love. It's the only way, right?
Yeah, it's the only way. But on my case, it was something that I kept hidden. I didn't show to a lot of people. I did show to a couple of friends from high school, but then after high school, I just kept it to myself. I just kept writing because I always, that was the only way that I could express myself properly.
Wow. When did you then? I want people to hear one of your stories, but before that, when did you then? And the website for Nestor is nestorgomezstoryteller.com. But you will get some samples of his work and see about the storytelling festival coming up at Lifeline Theater on January 25th and February 1st, of which he is a big part, but when did you think of yourself as a storyteller?
Actually, I went to a reading that you were doing at the Civic Center, I believe, like 4 or 5 years ago. And after the reading, I approached you and I told you, like, hey, look, I've been writing poetry for a long time, and I wrote this story, and I showed you the story.
I remember that.
Later on, and you were so kind, you actually took the time to read the story, what you thought about the story. And I was like, oh my God, this guy who's so famous, who is doing a reading here, took time to read my story. So maybe my writing is not so bad.
Well, maybe also you looked at me and said, wait a minute, this guy doesn't tell a story very well, so maybe I could do I could do this.
You were reading from the book that you have written, but it was basically a story, but it was on written form. It wasn't like in oral form,
yeah.
Which is slightly different. So what happened is that I decided I'm going to go tell one of my poems at a poetry reading. So I went to the Green Mill,
sure.
To the poetry reading at the Green Mill. But then I went there and I'm like, oh, this poetry is in English. And all my poetry was in Spanish. So I'm like, I cannot translate it on the go. And then at that place, there was a flyer for the Mott. I went to the Mott for the first time just to see what was the Mott all about, and I heard some amazing storytellers. I heard Archie
Obez. Yeah.
No, Archie R. Jankum. He's gonna be a Filero solo as well. And I heard him, and he actually inspired me to start telling stories. Him and Lily B. I heard Lily B. was another amazing storyteller. Because at first I was like, well, nobody's gonna listen to my story because I'm an immigrant. I have an accent.
Right.
And then I heard Lily B. on the radio talking about Humo Park and mangoes and her abuela. And I'm like, oh, I could do this. And then I went to the Mott. My wife bought me some tickets as a birthday present. I went to the Mott. I put my name on the hat. They called my name. I told my first story. And it just took over my life.
This is an amazing story. I am talking with Nestor Gomez. We got to take a commercial break, then get some news. We'll come back and he'll fill us in on what he's done since those initial storytelling days, because he is a great storyteller. And I'm going to play a 5-minute story of his called Love Hurts that I just find to be amazing. That may be an old one, but it's a beautiful, beautiful, wonderful, moving story. We'll be right back.
Freedom.
You're listening again to Chris Vellillo, Oh Freedom, Songs of the Civil Rights Movement. I'm talking to my new good friend, Nestor Gomez. You can go to NestorGomezStoryteller.com to learn more about him, or you can go see him when he is part of the Filet of Solo Storytelling Festival, which is really a pretty amazing thing. January 18th through February 2nd. It's easy to find. Just go to Lifeline Theater with an RE.com. You are doing there, Nestor, the 80 Minutes from Around the World immigration stories that you just did this week at Steppenwolf to sold-out audiences, right?
Yes.
You curate this show. I hate that word, but you produce this show, and you select the stories from colleagues and friends from other countries. It is not all Guatemalans.
No. It's people from all continents, people from all different ways of life. We try to be very inclusive. We try to have people who are who came here with documents, people who came here without documents, people who are descendants, people who are allies. We try to also represent the LGBT community, because
sure.
It's very important as well.
Sure. And it was a huge hit at Steppenwolf this week.
Yes.
And it is something that may wind up, if Nestor and I have our way, traveling the United States, because this is a people do not understand. The sad thing is, the reason storytelling can be so powerful and important is to help people understand what people just hear. Immigrants, and it's a black and white thing here, and that is not what it is. It is a deeper, more meaningful, more powerful thing that will shape this entire country. I want you to hear a more than 5-minute long piece that Nestor, when did you first do Love Hurts? Do you remember when you first performed this?
About 2 years ago, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, about
it
2 years
ago. You can see it. You can see it on his website if you just go to NestorGomezStoryteller.com. But I want you to hear it, to hear what a great story. This is not an easy story to tell, ladies and gentlemen, but it's brilliantly told. Here's Nestor Gomez.
Before I left the house today, I looked at myself in the mirror and I told myself, you're beautiful. You're beautiful. Damn, you're beautiful. Thank you. You see, the first time that I remember somebody called me beautiful, I was 8 years old. I was playing dress up with my sister. She was wrapping a towel around my body to form a dress. And she looked at me and she said, oh, you look beautiful. At the moment, my father came into the room. And he got so mad. He grabbed the towel and ripped it away from my body. And he screamed at me, men are not supposed to be beautiful. Men are supposed to be manly. I don't ever want to see you playing these kind of games again. He didn't give me any time to explain to him that the reason why I was playing dress up with my sister is because I had asked my sister to play soccer with me. But she had only agreed to play soccer if I had played dress up with her first. But my father never gave me time to explain, and he never explained me why he was so mad at me. You see, silence was the way that my father and my family dealt with things. A couple of years later, I got really close to my uncle, who was a couple of years older than me. My father never had time for me. So my uncle was the person who taught me how to play marbles, how to play soccer. He taught me how to do everything. He was the oldest brother that I ever wanted to have. Back then, we used to raise bunnies in our house. And my mother used to send me and my uncle to the nearby farms to cut grass to feed the bunnies. So one day, my mother sent me and my uncle to the farm. And we were cutting grass when my uncle asked me a favor. Now, I love my uncle. And when he asked me to pull down my pants, lay down on the grass, face down so he could get on top of me, I let him. I didn't want to ruin the relationship that I had with him because I love him. A couple of days later, my mother sent me and my uncle back to the farm, and we were taking too long. So she sent my sister to see what was going on. What are you guys doing? My sister said as she saw my uncle naked on top of me. She ran back to the house to tell my mother. After the day, my mother didn't let my uncle come close to me anymore. But she never explained me anything. She never told me what was going on. You see, silence was the way that my mother and my family dealt with things. Silence was also the way that I dealt with things because I started to develop a speech impediment. I used to stutter really badly whenever I had to talk to people, and especially at school. So one of the teachers that was fond of me called my parents one day for a teacher's parents conference. You son needs some kind of therapy, the teacher told my parents. Therapy? Therapy is for crazy people and for rich people that can't afford it, my father said as he got up and walked out of the room. The next day, the teacher called me after class and he told me that he had a friend that was a speech therapist and he had asked some questions about my condition and the therapist had said for me to go to my house and talk in front of a mirror. So I nodded and I did that. But to be honest with you, I only did it for a while because I hated to see my face in the mirror making stupid faces and trying to talk. I hated myself. I got over my stuttering eventually as I got older, but I never went to therapy. In fact, I only went to therapy a couple of years ago when I was going through my second divorce and my fourth and maybe fifth attempt at killing myself. So how are you feeling today? The therapist said with a big smile as she saw me walk into the room. And I don't know about you guys, but when you're feeling like crap and somebody asks you how you're feeling, it kind of makes you feel worse. So I got so mad, I just wanted to throw the shit across the room and get out of there. So I just got up and I told the therapist, therapy is for crazy people and for rich people that can't afford it. And as I started to walk out of the room, before you leave, the therapist told me, look across the room and tell me what you see. And I did that and I froze because there was a mirror there. And I hated what I saw. I hated myself. It took me many sessions of therapy for me to understand that the sexual abuse that I was a victim of was not my fault. I was just looking for love, and I got taken advantage of. It took me many sessions of therapy to realize that love is not how other people see you or treat you. Love is how you treat and how you see yourself. There is nothing more beautiful than loving yourself. So today, before I left the house, I looked at myself in the mirror, and I told myself those words that have become my mantra every day. You are beautiful. You are beautiful. Damn, you are beautiful.
Nestor Gomez, that is an amazing piece of writing and performing, because part of, as you know better than I do, the art of storytelling is it's a performance art, is
yes.
it not?
Yes, it's because not only you have to write the story, but you also have to tell the story in a compelling way.
Yeah. It is an amazing thing to have met you 5 or 6 years ago, and it is an amazing thing to have followed your career, and it's going to be an amazing, even more amazing thing to see what you do with your stories and with your life. Nestor, it's an honor to know you.
It's an honor for me to be here.
You can see him at the Filet of Solo Storytelling Festival. Just go to NestorGomezStoryteller.com and look at your Chicago Tribune, because what I really do is write, and I'm going to write about my young friend here. I call you young.
Yeah.
You are young.
Yeah, it's a young.
Well, hell, everybody's young to me now. Nestor, knock 'em dead at the festival, and it's an honor to know you, and thank you for the dolls.
Thank you.
Made by your uncle in Guatemala. NestorGomezStoryteller.com. Take a little break, and I'll be right back.
Come round by my side and I'll sing you a song. I'll sing it so softly it'll do no one wrong. On Birmingham Sunday, the blood ran like wine, and the choir kept singing freedom. That cold autumn morning, no, I saw the sun.
Welcome back to the show. I am joined in this studio by the impresario of all impresarios, Daryl Nitz, who has been on the show a number of times, who has very creative in putting on intriguing and entertaining and enlightening shows. Those three adjectives are crucial and rare to be combined with one person. He's also a school teacher. Yeah, that's like a real job. A cast member of this upcoming show, Takora Rogers, and Timna Axe, who's the communication manager for Chicago Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights. You're all here to talk about, and it goes to the Chris Vallejo Songs of the Civil Rights Movement, Let Freedom Ring Chicago, a musical celebration of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Takes place Monday, Martin Luther King Jr. Day, the 21st, at City Winery. Go to citywinery.com/Chicago to get tickets after you hear these three interesting people talk. Daryl, you were telling me, and pull that mic close to you,
okay,
how this show came to be.
Sure. So I was talking with City Winery about doing another Mr. Kelly show.
Because they've been successful.
Yeah, we've done Ella Fitzgerald and Sarah Vaughan. So we were all booked and we were going to do it. Well, I knew that Martin Luther King's birthday was the 15th.
Why? Because you get the day off of school?
How did you know? No, I just know the 15th of January.
He knew that and said, wait a minute, the 21st, I'm off that day.
Well, I didn't realize it until then. I started looking at it because I thought maybe tomorrow would have been the King holiday.
Sure.
The 14th, but they always do it after. So then I found out, oh, it's the Martin Luther King holiday. So then the show was, we decided not to do a Mr. Kelly show. And it was actually Jeannie Tanner who said to me, well, what about a Martin Luther King show? So then I looked and I saw that it was actually Martin Luther King's 90th birthday. That's what he would be celebrating on the 15th.
You know what often occurs to me, and because I've written about King Drive, and I've written about 68, and written about a number of things, and I'd love all of you to just offer your opinion. I think if Martin Luther King could come back to Earth, even at 90, he would be heartsick.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with you. You know, the civil rights movement in so many ways fought for equality and equal rights. And what we've found, I think, from my perspective at Chicago Lawyers Committee is over the last 50 years, although many of our laws are on their face neutral and treat everybody equally regardless of race, the impacts are still disparate. We still have unequal outcomes for people solely because of the color of their skin.
Yeah.
And how does that happen, and what do we do to fix it? We have to be really, I think, aggressive and proactive today in the same ways that Martin Luther King was in his day as well.
Dakar, what do you think about that? As an African-American woman, you have a unique perspective here. Dare, move that mic, impresario, move it a little closer to you.
Yeah,
friend.
You know, I think when I think about Martin Luther King, and I'm working on right now on my dissertation for in education to get my doctorate in education, and I found that when you look at education in Chicago and the disparities, the inequities in education alone. I think that he would just be heartbroken.
Oh, I think he
to see that here we are in 2019, and these inequities continue to exist.
Well, you wonder, oh, gee, what would he think of what would he think of the 50 school closings? You know, a few years ago,
yeah.
in certain neighborhoods here. I just that's why I think, in many ways, this kind of celebration and King was very. Sort of music-centric. I think that gets lost in the whole Martin Luther King thing.
Yes.
He made a great speech. He wasn't a great, I don't know if he was a great singer, but he might have been. But he really, music was a huge, huge part of his life. And I think a concert like this reaffirms that, but it also reaffirms and prods conversation about what we've just touched on.
Right. I mean, that. If you look at his whole life, which I ended up kind of researching, music was a part of a lot of his, you know, public speakings. Then there were fundraisers even done by, like, Sinatra and Sammy
Absolutely.
Davis Jr.
Sure.
And then he had certain favorite singers, Mahalia Jackson and so
Aretha
forth.
Aretha Franklin. Yeah.
They, you know, all got on board, you know what I mean?
Well, I also think he spurred and inspired a lot of people. Think of someone like Curtis Mayfield, for instance. Mm-hmm. I mean, he had inspired, the whole movement inspired song.
Right.
So what is, you put the arm on, and Daryl's got to be the nicest arm twister in the world. You obviously called the car and say, hey, what are you doing for King's birthday? Is that how it happened?
Well, pretty much.
Yeah. I just make calls, and I ask people who I think would just be right. You know, I really try to hire and work with people who I know aren't afraid to show their heart on stage and who function as entertainers as well as great singers. But it's a wide breadth of styles and everything. It's very eclectic, you know, sort of like myself.
Yeah.
And I enjoy putting these shows together because the people I work with are also such a joy. And this organization also, like I just did Chicago Civil Rights Group, and this, you know, Martin Luther King is all over the Chicago Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights, like, website, and then you look at their history, and this is their 50th anniversary, and all these things just seem to be aligned. Plus, they had done a fundraiser at City Winery. So everything just seemed to come into place, like, we're doing the show. And then City Winery was like, we love it. And they've been so supportive.
There was no reluctance on their part.
No, they've been so supportive. They've done graphics. And now we have Jeannie Tanner, who wrote an original song, because I want to be the change. And things are just kind of, you know, popping into place for it.
So it's turning.
And I was really excited when Daryl called, because one, you've got Martin Luther King, who's a minister. I'm not only a jazz singer, but also a gospel singer. So I, you know, and I immediately told him, I said, I want to do Precious Lord.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. A few times.
Yeah. One, my mother was good friends with Mahalia Jackson, but Mahalia sang that song at Martin Luther King's funeral. And I just felt, and that's a song that I've sang for, you know, since I was a little girl. So I was really excited about presenting that particular piece.
And how about you, Tina Axe, the communication
Axel?
Axel, yeah.
Axel.
But I like Axe. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, it is.
Maybe I'll just use that.
Well, no, that's what they call David Axelrod, Axe. So
yeah.
I'll call you Axel.
He copied me, actually.
Tina Axel. The Chicago. Tell me about the Chicago Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights. I mean,
yeah. Well, like Daryl said, it's our 50th anniversary, and our roots really are with Martin Luther King. You know, in 1963, he went to jail in Birmingham, which many people know about, and a lot of people today still remember watching the TVs when police officers responded to these peaceful protests with batons,
sure,
and with hoses.
Yeah,
he went to jail, and then John F. Kennedy tried to find an attorney to help represent him, and found that attorneys were really disconnected from the civil rights movement at the time. And so he called for a big meeting of attorneys to bring their skills from the courtroom into the streets to help people who were down in the South fighting segregation. And that became the Lawyers Committee in D.C. And then a few years later, in 1969, after Martin Luther King was assassinated, the Chicago Lawyers Committee was formed.
Do you know who started the Chicago, since I go back so far, do you know who started the Chicago Committee?
You know, it was a collection of law firms that really go far back, things like Sidley Austin, Kirkland, many of the law firms who today are really still involved in a lot of our hate crime cases, our education equity, housing discrimination, voting rights, all this stuff is still going on today, and those same firms are still really contributing a lot of hours to help us.
This is great. I'm keeping you guys all the way to 11 o'clock. Why are you laughing? This is almost like Daryl's on this show like every month. You know, I've got a great show. It's Roy Rogers' birthday, and we're doing a show at City Winery.
I'm
going to
do
Roy
one for
Rogers.
Your birthday.
We're going to take this all the way. Well, we still got a minute. We'll take this to news. Okay, good. So, how many performers are going to be there?
There's 10. 10 performers and a choir.
Wow.
So, Mark Brunell has been associated with the Gora Methodist
Church. That's right.
So that his choir is going to be, you know, maybe like a pared down version is going to be a part of this night as well. So we have Frida Lee, Greta Pope, LaShira Moore, Cynthia Clary, who's also a professor at Roosevelt, Jeannie Tanner, Lynn Jordan, Sophie Grimm,
Takora Rogers,
yes. Isaiah Mitchell.
Margaret.
And Margaret Murphy Webb.
Mm-hmm. How do you rehearse? I don't know if you can.
So
rehearse.
No, people are getting together with Mark ahead of time, and then we do have to run like our closing.
But like
Takora
is going, I'm going to do this, and someone else goes, I want to do this. So no, you can't all sing the same song.
Oh, but you want to know what's interesting?
Yes.
You know the idea. Someone once told me this. They said, Daryl, you put together shows that are like, I think it was Becky Menzie. She says you put together shows that are like a diamond necklace, where every little bead shines. And the thing is that Tokora's got her story. People weren't fighting for that. Then Lynn Jordan's like, I want to sing Amazing Grace. That was this. You know what I'm saying?
Wow, that's
and
great.
You're able to give people what they want. And,
yeah.
and I really do that. I'm like, you know, sometimes
yeah, you
I might say, I need you to sing these two. But other times I give a whole choice. And in this case, there was a wide breadth of material sources.
Well,
you know?
We'll get deeper into it in the second half hour. I'm in here with Daryl Nitz, the impresario. Takora Rogers, who's getting her PhD, aren't you?
That's
fantastic. I want to talk more about that.
Oh, my.
And, and Tina Axel, the communications manager, she'll talk more about the Chicago Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights. Tina, are you a lawyer?
I'm not, you know,
good,
but I work with
good.
A lot of lawyers.
That's fine. I'm not a lawyer either, but I like a few lawyers.
Yeah, there's some good ones out there, I swear.
Please stay tuned. Oh, I know there are, but I want to figure out what compels them to get involved in this aspect of the whole thing.
Paul and Silas bound in jail, had no money for to go their bail. Keep your eyes on the prize. Silas began to shout. Doors popped open, they walked out. Keep your your eyes on the prize. Hold on, hold on, hold on.
That again, maybe the last time you heard your Chris Melillo from his amazing CD and DVD, and maybe soon to be stage show if Daryl Nitz would get involved, called Oh Freedom, Songs of the Civil Rights Movement. I'm playing it this weekend and next in honor of the Martin Luther King Jr. Day, which takes place Monday the 21st, and which is celebrated by two of my guests, producer impresario Daryl Nitz and cast member singer Takora Rogers, in here. They're part of the show Let Freedom Ring Chicago, a musical celebration of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Also in here is Timna Axel, the communications manager for Chicago Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights, which will benefit in some portion from the proceeds for this show. Timna, tell me, you'll get proceeds from the show, and that will keep this organization afloat. Give me an example of something, of a concrete thing that the organization has done recently.
Yeah, well,
or an ongoing thing.
Sure. We have a lot of ongoing projects, but I think one big deal is just late last year, we filed the lawsuit challenging Chicago Public Schools for their plan to close National Teachers Academy, NTA.
Oh,
have you heard of it?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so NTA is a top-performing elementary school on the South Side.
No, I know a lot about this.
It's a wonderful community of people, and CPS wanted to close it, but the problem was they were relying on a metric that disproportionately affects schools that are majority black.
Right.
They're looking at just test scores, and when you just look at the net test score performance, rather than looking at the growth of the students or other factors.
Well, and also, as you know about those 50 school closings, there was no looking at the community. There was no looking at what the closing of this school might do by means of further disenfranchising these disenfranchised communities. So you look at, I hate the word holistic, but the city and government doesn't look at any of these things holistically, do they?
Well, it's really hard to say what their priorities were in this case, to be honest. We're not sure what was the driving factor, but the fact is that the parents in this case really took this case into their hands. They wanted to fight this decision and get some accountability from the public school district. So they brought us on, Chicago Lawyers Committee, as well as some partners, LAF and other folks. And we took this case to court. We filed a complaint and asked for a preliminary injunction from the court to freeze this plan. And the judge granted that injunction on a civil rights claim that we brought. To our knowledge, this is the first time that a school closure has been stopped on the grounds of a racial discrimination lawsuit. So, you know, we think this could be precedent setting.
Oh, no question.
And we're just really proud of this community that showed the entire city that you can fight something that was said to be a done deal.
You know, and the other interesting thing about your organization is occasionally groups like that, they don't know where to go. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I mean, they feel trapped. The city's telling them one thing, and that horrible, you know, hackneyed, you can't fight City Hall phrase just takes over and pushes people away. But you guys are accessible, and you're there.
Well, we really try to be driven by the community. You know, one of the issues that's always been present, one of the tensions between activist lawyers and communities is that oftentimes these lawyers will ride into a neighborhood and say, we know what your problem is and we know how to fix it.
Yeah.
And they don't. So we try as hard as we can to listen to what neighborhoods are telling us that they need. And we let our priorities kind of be guided by them. It's an ongoing process, but we really try to operate that way.
That's great. Lawyers who listen. That's the new mantra, as far as I'm concerned. In celebrating, we started this whole segment off on a sort of sour note that Dr. King, who would have been 90 years old this week, frankly, would be heartbroken were he able to come back and see what's happening here. You know, I had a kid on a few weeks ago who was making a movie, a young African-American man from Detroit who was making a film about the many, many, many Martin Luther King Jr. honorary streets across this country and how so many of them, perhaps the majority of them, are situated in unbelievably downtrodden neighborhoods that have gotten even worse since the naming of the street. on a more upbeat note, to Cora Rogers, when you sing and you play and you get involved in a Daryl Nitz production, this one obviously is meaning for you beyond the normal kind of thing. And I think the whole scene there, Daryl, is likely to be wonderfully celebratory. Don't you think, Takora?
Oh, my God, yes. Daryl has a knack of pulling together entertainers who have so many different styles, yet can come together and tell a story, a total story. And that's what's, I think, so unique about his approach.
Yeah.
And it really gets everybody excited because we don't normally come together in this way because sure. we're such different.
It's like a musical dinner party or something.
You know? Exactly. Well, but also there's a narrative, and there's what I love about it, even the Mr. Kelly's things, is there's a kind of overriding narrative umbrella to the evening. Yes,
right.
It's nice to hear song after song after song after song, but when there is a thread and a thematic thread to it and a purpose to it, it
yes.
just
yes.
punctuates that kind of evening, right, Daryl? I mean,
yeah.
you,
that's what I look for. You know, that's, I mean, this just started all just coming together, and I'm like, okay, this is the perfect show to do. I mean, we hope to do another Mr. Kelly show. And you
sure.
know, I'm doing a Nat King Cole centennial coming up in March. You know, it's like, there's other things. But this was something that wasn't planned. You know, it was like, okay, we're not going to do the Mr. Kelly show, and then finding this great organization and just even looking at so many of the events in Martin Luther King's life that took place in Chicago.
Oh,
I mean, just that in itself.
Yeah, 1967, we tried to kill him here. No, we did.
Yes, in Marquette Park.
In Marquette Park, we tried
yes.
to kill him.
We're keeping this uplifting.
Yes.
If he was alive today.
Well, but I think his the
yeah,
whole
no,
Chicago
right.
thing is right. He moved into that apartment, and he made a march in Marquette Park, and,
yep.
and literally he was hit in the head with
yeah.
a rock, and then the amazing thing, just for another little anecdote, the Martin Luther King Jr. Drive here is the first street in the United States named in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King. You know why?
No.
Because Richard J. Daley, when the Democratic Convention was starting to come here, he was not afraid that the convention was going to be disrupted as it was by hippies and radicals and me, but by Black Chicago. And he did that to placate the Black community, which is another horrible Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. story, using his name. And his speech he made in front of the city council was unbelievable, what great friends they were. And it's unbelievable. But in doing King, and I know King is supposed to be studied in public schools, but is not always studied in public schools. Takora Rogers, something like this, and maybe you're before you sing or after you sing, you'll have a few words to say, maybe about your mom and Mahalia Jackson. But this is the kind of event that can bring King to a new audience, don't you think?
I think it is, but unfortunately, I think that the little history that African American students know is Martin Luther King.
Yeah.
They believe that it our history began and ends
yeah.
with him.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and so they probably know more about him than any other history, but I absolutely believe that they need to know more about him. And you had brought up Marquette Park, and,
yeah.
and Martin Luther King was said, I remember this because I just happened to be around at the time.
I know what you're going to say. Go ahead.
He said that in all of the cities that he has been in, Chicago was the worst.
Yep.
The
he
most
said, I've been
racist.
To some of the Montgomery. I have
yes.
seen racist America, and it is worse in Chicago than any
anywhere.
Place I've ever seen.
Anywhere. And we are, Chicago is the most segregated city.
Yeah, still.
Still.
Yeah.
And I've traveled a lot. I mean,
yeah.
not only in the United States, but across the world. And we are clearly the most segregated city.
But you can't live, like I live in Rogers Park, West Rogers Park, you know, and I've lived there for almost 20 years of my life. And one of the reasons why I live there, even why I teach at the school that I teach on the west side of Glenview, is because it is more diverse. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? There's still some.
Well, there's some diverse neighborhoods. I think Hyde Park is still relatively wonderfully diverse. It's mm-hmm. getting a little upscale now with all those buildings on 53rd Street. But when you look at the disenfranchised neighborhoods here, go look at West Pullman. Go look at Roseland. I mean, places like that should not exist anywhere.
But, of course, you also have to keep in mind many of the old neighborhoods, particularly on the west side, some on the south side, the gentrification that is going on is really tearing some of these neighborhoods apart.
I know.
And people aren't able to continue to even live where they've lived for so many years because of the prices.
Well, that's why you need lawyers involved in this.
Exactly.
Does the organization, and I hate to say this, but do you in any way actively look for things, or do you sit there and wait for people to come to you? Because again, some people just don't know the mechanism for finding help.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a combination. You know, we wait to hear from folks who are having problems, but it's not a secret what the problems of this city are. You know, we just talked about it. It's segregation. It's inequity in income, in wealth. You know, homes, property values are so much lower in majority black neighborhoods than they are in majority mm-hmm. white neighborhoods for no other reason except mm-hmm. for race. You know, it's education inequality. It's health outcomes. We see a difference in life expectancy in parts of the city just based on your race.
Exactly.
So we want to look for systemic solutions for these systemic problems. And when we do find a case that has that potential, we will pursue it.
Yeah. That's great. We got to take a little break, then I'll continue on with these three people, and you will hear. Should I play the song?
Yeah, play it.
We'll play it.
That's actually part of the solution.
We'll take a short commercial break, and then we will get into the wonderfully celebratory thing that's going to happen.
We're going to celebrate it.
But it also, you know, you can have fun and still, you know, deal. Having fun and dealing with the shadow of important issues is not a bad way to live. We'll be right back. Well, that's the last you'll hear of Chris Villillo, because we want to hear Daryl Nitz, Decora Rogers, and Team Axel. We want to hear Jeannie Tanner's I Want to Be the Change. Thank you, Ernie.
I want to be the change that I want to see. Ain't pointing any fingers, 'cause three pointing back at me. I want to be the change. I want to be the change that freedom brings. Justice anywhere threatens justice everywhere. Words spoken that we must heed. Your voices and sing loud and clear, and we will have no fear. Let freedom ring. I want to be the change that I want to see. Come and join me and let freedom ring. I want to be the change. I want to be the change. I want to be the change that freedom brings. The time is always right when love leads the way to drive out hate, darkness, and pain. Don't be silent with your actions. Start a peaceful chain reaction. Rise above the chaos, kindness can sustain. One another, our sisters and brothers, let freedom ring. If you can't fly, then run. If you can't run, run and walk, just keep moving. Hope must never die. There's no turning back, holding hands as we climb up that mountain and keep that dream alive. I wanna be the change that I want to see. Oh, come and join me and let freedom ring. I wanna be the change that I want to see. Ain't pointing any fingers, 'cause they're pointing back at me. I wanna be the change. I wanna be the change that freedom brings. Let freedom ring.
That was, and Daryl Nitz, I'm not lauding just you for that. I Want to Be the Change by Jeannie Tanner.
Yeah.
She performing that?
She's doing that with LaShere Moore and Sophie Grimm, and then the part that kind of kicks in at the end there is going to be the cast coming out, and we're going to create a little slideshow, and we're doing these I Am the Change signs, and Tina's going to take some to work, and they're going to do some, and we're just going to make a slideshow to show at the end of the show, saying that we all need to sort of be a part of this change.
It's an incredible combination of entertaining and empowering, is
yes,
what you're
absolutely
saying.
Yeah.
Again, the show is Monday, the 21st at City Winery. You can get tickets by going to citywinery.com/Chicago.
Right.
And you want to say?
Yeah, there's a discount code you can use. Freedom19, it doesn't matter, lowercase, Freedom19, and that will give you $5 off whatever level of ticket that you want to purchase. So if it's 25, it'll be 20, or
we're taking selfies in here. So bear with us.
45 will be 40. So that Freedom19 will get you that, and I mean, it's going to be a great.
It's
great
not
night.
Just, I mean, you really have, we've talked about some important issues and some, you know, not fun things about the life and times of Dr. Martin Luther King, but the gist of it is, this is a day to celebrate him, but I also think to celebrate what he stood for and the world he wanted to see. That I Have a Dream speech, if you listen to the entirety of it, is a lot different than just I Have a Dream. It wasn't. I think it's become this kind of cliche, don't you think?
Yeah,
yeah.
You got to listen to. You got to take his life in context, and I think what he wanted to do and what he wanted in this world. A lot of others too, who fought with him and beside him, some of whom are still alive, and some lawyers who are now fighting for this same kind of thing. Civil rights is not a matter to be.
No, and now we have other groups of people
with.
That are also needing their civil rights protected. I mean, from all the different.
Well, I actually think, given the times, we all need our civil rights protected.
Yes.
Given what is going on in this world, Daryl Nitz, it is always great to see you. I'm assuming
you.
You'll be in here to talk about who's your next one?
Nat King Cole,
of course. Nat King Cole. He had a park here. He lived here for a while. That's something people forget about. I mentioned Curtis Mayfield earlier about writing some great civil rights anthems, and people forget Curtis Mayfield was from Chicago.
Yeah.
As Studs Terkel once said, we suffer from a collective Alzheimer's,
and
we forget this stuff. Thank you, Daryl Tecora. Thank you, Timna Axel. Thank you.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
So much, yeah.
Oh, no, my pleasure. My absolute pleasure. Again, go to citywinery.com/Chicago. Ben Anderson, the world's greatest producer. Ernie Skatton, the world's greatest engineer. I will see you next Sunday.